and they condescended, after some delay, to accept from the Roman Senate the title of Augustus. When they first assumed the reins of government, the eldest of these princes was 21, the second 20, and the third only 17 years of age.
The reign of the three brothers was a time of strife in the empire, with provinces everywhere testing their strength against the control of Constantinople and Rome. Constantius ultimately survived to reunite the divided empire, but the latter part of his reign was darkened by corruption.
The divided provinces of the empire were again united by the victory of Constantius. But as that feeble prince was destitute of personal merit, either in peace or war, as he feared his generals and distrusted his ministers, the triumph of his arms served only to establish the reign of the eunuchs over the Roman world. Those unhappy beings, the ancient production of Oriental jealousy and despotism, were introduced into Greece and Rome by the contagion of Asiatic luxury. Their progress was rapid, and the eunuchs, who in the time of Augustus had been abhorred as the monstrous retinue of an Egyptian queen, were gradually admitted into the families of matrons, of senators, and of the emperors themselves. Restrained by the severe edicts of Domitian and Nerva, cherished by the pride of Diocletian, reduced to an humble station by the prudence of Constantine, they multiplied in the palaces of his degenerate sons, and insensibly acquired the knowledge and at length the direction of the secret counsels of Constantius. The aversion and contempt which mankind had so uniformly entertained for that imperfect species appears to have degraded their character, and to have rendered them almost as incapable as they were supposed to be of conceiving any generous sentiment or of performing any worthy action. But the eunuchs were skilled in the arts of flattery and intrigue, and they alternately governed the mind of Constantius by his fears, his indolence, and his vanity. Whilst he viewed in a deceitful mirror the fair appearance of public prosperity, he supinely permitted them to intercept the complaints of the injured provinces, to accumulate immense treasures by the sale of justice and of honours, to disgrace the most important dignities by the promotion of those who had purchased at their hands the powers of oppression, and to gratify their resentment against the few independent spirits who arrogantly refused to solicit the protection of slaves. Of these slaves, the most distinguished was the chamberlain Eusebius, who ruled the monarch and the palace with such absolute sway that Constantius, according to the sarcasm of an impartial historian, possessed some credit with his haughty favourite.
The eunuchs orchestrated the acclamation of the imprisoned nephew of Constantius as Caesar. Then aged 25, Gallus was put in place in Antioch, manipulated by these powers behind the throne, while Constantius went off to the western wing of the empire. Another nephew, Julian, was left in prison.
The writers, the most indulgent to the memory of Gallus, and even Julian himself, though he wished to cast a veil over the frailties of his brother, are obliged to confess that the Caesar was incapable of reigning. Transported from a prison to a throne, he possessed neither genius nor application nor docility to compensate for the want of knowledge and experience. A temper naturally morose and violent, instead of being corrected, was soured by solitude and adversity. The remembrance of what he had endured disposed him to retaliation rather than to sympathy. And the ungoverned sallies of his rage were often fatal to those who approached his person or were subject to his power. Constantina, his wife, is described not as a woman, but as one of the infernal furies tormented with an insatiate thirst of human blood. Instead of employing her influence to insinuate the mild counsels of prudence and humanity, she exasperated the fierce passions of her husband. And as she retained the vanity, though she had renounced the gentleness of her sex, a pearl necklace was esteemed an equivalent price for the murder of an innocent and virtuous nobleman. The cruelty of Gallus was sometimes displayed in the undissembled violence of popular or military executions, and was sometimes disguised by the abuse of law and the forms of judicial proceedings. The private houses of Antioch and the palaces of public resort were besieged by spies and informers, and the Caesar himself, concealed in a plebeian habit, very frequently condescended to assume that odious character. Every apartment of the palace was adorned with the instruments of death and torture, and the general consternation was diffused through the capital of Syria.
Gallus rapidly forgot to whom he owed his authority.